Welcome to Perspectives, Coast Community Radio's new issues-oriented show. I'm Joan Herman. In November, Astoria residents will choose a new city council member from among two candidates. Bruce Jones is a retired Coast Guard administrator and commander with extensive volunteer experience in the community, while Corey Peterson is a Jewel Music School teacher and union president, as well as a conductor and board member of local music organizations. Due to his teaching schedule in Jewel, Corey was not able to be in the studio today, so we pre-recorded a telephone interview with him earlier this week. Welcome, and thank you for being available to speak about your candidacy, Corey.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Would you tell us why you decided to run for Astoria City Council?
Well, absolutely. I remember when I heard that two wards are opening up, and one of them happening to be in Ward 4, which is my ward, I remember looking at my wife, and I just kind of looked at it, and I went, interesting. I said, you know what, that could be interesting. And so lo and behold, we'd go out into the neighborhood, and like we often do, and just talk to our neighbors and people along the way as we're walking with our daughter. And my wife would talk to some of the neighbors and say, you know, Corey's interested in potentially looking at that ward. We're running for city council. And so from there, more and more people said, hey, you know, you should give it a shot. And so I thought about it. And with the option of having two wards open, I figured this is a good transitional time for the city. And so I thought, well, you know, let's go ahead and give it a shot. It's the story, in my opinion, has got an absolute beauty to it. It's an astonishing place to live. Opportunities abound everywhere, and just like everywhere, there's challenges. But I thought for a lot of us young folk who are coming into the city, and for the older folk who've established what's current and what's wonderful about this city, I'd like to be a part of what kind of helps maintain that attraction for future people and for the current ones coming in.
You mentioned it's a transitional time. How so?
Well, simply in the aspect that you've got the city council four wards, and you've got half of them are being open. So that's what I meant by transitional. You've got two openings up in that position.
Okay. What do you see as the most pressing issues facing the city?
Well, I know there's been a lot of discussion in regards to, I guess if you would call it low-income housing. I think that's been one that's been thrown about for a while. And I think in an effort, I don't know if I'd want to say low-income as much as I'd like to say probably affordable housing for everyone. I think that's probably one of the more pressing ones, I think, at the moment.
And regarding the housing crunch, you mentioned in a September Daily Historian article that you would like to see more nonprofits brought into the discussion. Could you explain what you mean?
Well, I'm not quite sure exactly who and what's been involved with it, but I do know, at least in my district, we have operations that kind of help out with placing families who are in some assistance or some need with housing availability, and they're not quite sure exactly where to look. And I believe Astoria has got to have something similar to that. And so that's what I just simply meant, is making sure that we follow through and make sure that organizations, if they are not helping, making sure we seek those out so we can assist as much as possible.
Okay. What strengths and experiences would you bring to the council?
Well, I like to think leadership skills. I like to think that I'm fairly confident with that. I do know that my wife and I, since we moved out here a decade ago to Astoria, that we've worked our tails off and continue to work our tails off. And one of them is creating our symphony together. That's something that did not even exist in Astoria whatsoever 10 years ago. And to grow something from the ground up and then working through and making it become a 501c3 over the years and producing the product that we have currently, I think it takes a lot of guts and a lot of determination to make that happen, and not shortchanging those that have helped and assisted along the way by any means. But I do know my wife and I, when we're looking and setting our minds forward to doing something, we do it. And for myself personally, with my school district, I like to think that as the union president for the last 3-4 years here, I like to think that I am working for another government district, the school district here, and I like to think that I have understanding of a budget. I simply have to do that every single year for my program. And as for the laws with the schools and the procedures, those are very common things that we have to do out here. And in being in a small school district, K through 12 of only 150 to 170, that's, well, you can't hide. Let me put it that way. We can't hide. We all have to chip in, and I've been in the forefront for the past many years. And then on top of that, if I can add, I like to think, at least for me, experience, how can I say this, it's more than just time on the job. I think a lot of people can spend a lot of time on a job. But for me, what I've worked on specifically when I first came out here was my ability to absorb different points of views, listening to everybody that I work with, and understanding that they have different values, and that as much as I want to trust myself, I like to have to put that trust in other people. And like most things, I believe, learning that over time and through a vast different, you know, array of experiences, I guess you would say, helps that come to fruition. And I like to think those are some of the qualities, at least, of a good leader.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Another big issue that is before the council or has been recently is the library and whether to remodel or rebuild it. Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, that's, you know, and that's where I know in that first article that we had in the Daily Historian, someone nicely had wrote in there, you know, where's the backbone of these two candidates? Because I know Bruce and myself had stated the same thing. Not being privy to everything that's going on behind the scenes sometimes, that's a hard one to answer. And I know, as someone else once told me, well, there's a lot of hard, a lot of hard questions, a lot of hard answers. And that's a challenging one. That is one where you look at it and you have to you have to sit there and look at the questions of what are the positives for keeping the library where it currently is, and what are the positives for putting that position in somewhere else in the city. And that simply is going to take a lot of determination of listening to the community, understanding the importance of the library in the community, how does it relate to other functions, whether it's more education for those that need classes, whether it's reading, writing, to allow them to continue their education, adults or students, and where's the best place to do it? Is it where it's at currently, or is it somewhere else where it possibly may be more visible for the community? And then you have your funds and your talk of costs. For what is this going to cost the city? And so it's not an easy answer. It's not one where I could say it falls here or there. It's through further discussions, as I mentioned, with the experience of hearing and listening and formulating ideas. And that's what I like to do if I'm elected in the city council.
Okay. I believe the council has decided as of now to remodel the library with existing funds already in the city budget.
Okay.
So it could be brought before the council again with two new members potentially.
That's
so
true.
How do you feel about that?
Like I said, after hearing what their reasonings are for keeping it there and what kind of programs, if I'm speaking more openly in that aspect, what kind of programs can they offer that may or may not have been offered at the library? How are they going to invite the public in? What's going to allow it to be more accessible? If that's an issue, with I've heard from some individuals within the community. So that's where I'm going to go with that. I'm going to simply just say a few further more discussions, and if it is something that will be brought up again for further discussion, I think it needs to be.
Okay. What other issues do you think should be brought before the council?
Well, and I don't know how Bruce might feel about this. I know it's kind of a wishy-washy one sometimes of whether it's highly important or not to have something in place, or do we have enough in place or not. But I'm speaking about, for example, the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake that is often being brought about, knowing that Seaside, obviously with their school districts, and I would imagine at some point Warrenton, if they haven't already, should be having those discussions. And that's one where I know a story. How in-depth are we going to get with that? I think that's another area of interest that would need to be discussed.
What do you see the council's role in that tsunami, potential tsunami and earthquake event?
Well, in general, and again, not completely knowing the complete role of where they are not allowed to reach. Somehow making sure when you look at the city, you have, for example, your police and you've got your fire department. You also have the individuals who work on the piers, on the ports down there, and the hospitals, and just making sure that everyone, including the schools, I cannot forget them, have the proper procedures in place to know what their role would be. Not necessarily to tell them what their roles are, but just to make sure that they know where to find that, to be educated, and to see if that can somehow be explained to individuals in the correct areas that need to understand what to do in case such an event were to happen.
Okay. What is your vision for Astoria 5, 10, or more years down the road?
You know, it's such a beautiful town. I remember my wife and I, we first drove in, and how can you not see that beautiful bridge, the Astoria Megler Bridge, when you pull in and you see everyone else who's coming in, whether or not you're aware of them, but you see cameras from the tourists driving by, and it's just an amazing thing. And then you take your eye off the bridge, and you realize the further beauty that's enveloped within the city. And simply to make sure that we cherish the city, like I said at the very beginning here, it has an abundance amount of beauty throughout it. And I want to make sure that, one, we keep that beauty present. We keep that small town charm and that feel and hold that pride in our hearts very, very closely. I know as our neighbors over there in Warrenton, they're expanding and they have a whole, in my viewpoint, they have a whole other vision going forth. And they have all the big growth and the box stores and whatnot. But I think for Astoria, we have a special niche. And I think in the future, along with the tourist aspect of it all, I think hold that close and dear to our heart and never, ever let that go.
Finally, why should voters choose you over your challenger, Bruce Jones?
That's something in such a small little bit is hard to convince somebody. I understand that very much so. But if I were to say to get out there and talk to individuals who know me, who understand me, talk with my school district, talk to anyone involved with any of my symphonies, and understand that when I say I'm going to give my 100%, I absolutely do so. I work my butt off on everything I've done in my life. If it's something I do not understand, I am out there and I'm talking and I'm researching. If I realize, oh my goodness, something's there could be something amiss or awry a little bit, I'm the first person out there communicating and listening. And that's the number one thing I think I always do and have always done, especially with my career in education. I listen. I always listen first, and I learn. And I think that's very, very important. And then when I have the information, I know what I want to do, and I have the ideas and the concepts that have been brought to me, mixed with my own, then I like to lead. And that's something I'm hoping voters will give me a chance to do.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today, Corey.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I very, very much appreciate the time you've taken out here. And I wish you the best for the rest of the day here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You have been listening to a pre-recorded interview with Astoria City Council candidate Corey Peterson. He is one of two challengers for the Ward 4 position that is on the November general election ballot. Next up is the other Ward 4 candidate for the Astoria City Council, Bruce Jones. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. I'm Joan Herman. If you're just joining me, I am interviewing the two candidates running for the Astoria City Council in November. We just heard a pre-recorded interview with Corey Peterson, a Jewel Music School teacher. In the studio now is Corey's challenger, retired Coast Guard commander and community volunteer, Bruce Jones. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Thanks, Joan. It's great to be here.
Tell us why you're running for Astoria City Council.
Well, I think my whole 32-year career in public service, first 30 years in the Coast Guard as a leader and manager and planner across the country, and 2 years of pretty significant and active community involvement here in Astoria has prepared me to be an effective city councilor. I first started attending city council meetings about 2.5 years ago when two of the groups that I volunteer with as a board member, the Friends of the Astoria Armory and Friends of the Astoria Column, had presentations to give to city council. And I ended up staying for the whole meeting and found it was intriguing. And I enjoyed the issues that were being talked about, especially with the tie into my master's degree in public administration that I got from Syracuse when I was a junior or mid-grade officer in the Coast Guard. I found the issues compelling. And the more I got involved in the community, working with those two groups, as well as the United Way of Clatsop County and the Columbia River Maritime Museum, I met a lot of people who are heavily involved in the community and learned more about the issues facing Astoria. And I began attending city council meetings as regularly as I could, my job permitting, over the last 2 years, and just found it very compelling. I found myself sitting in the back thinking about, well, what would it take to be an effective city councilor? An ability to manage an organization that has multiple departments, you know, public works and finance and budget and planning, operations, engineering, and management of day-to-day business, as well as long-term planning for the future and managing crises if you have something like a 2007 storm. And I thought about the work I'd done in the Coast Guard for all those many years, and I thought, you know, actually I have the qualities and capabilities required to be an effective city councilor, and I'd actually like to do it.
Great. So what do you see as the most pressing issues facing the community?
Well, there's so many issues. I mean, I think really the jobs of a city councilor, probably the two primary areas of focus are maintaining oversight of the day-to-day running of the city through the city manager, the management of the departments that make sure the city's infrastructure is working, that basic services are met for our citizens, and that we're financially solvent. That's a significant role, but equally important, if not even more important, for the city council, because the city staff can do most of the basic running of the city without the city council's input. Frankly, it's really planning for the future and making sure that we're considering the long-term impacts of our decisions. So, you know, key issue for the city, I think, is how do you maintain those unique qualities that make us all love Astoria, love living in Astoria, and make visitors love, it seems increasingly every year, more visitors love to come visit Astoria. You know, what are those key attributes? How do you preserve them while also facilitating the type of appropriate economic development that the city needs and economic diversification to ensure that our kids and our grandkids 20, 30 years from now have good living wage jobs in Astoria, and that affordable housing is available for the workers who live here. So I think, you know, change continues. Astoria has always been in a state of change, and it will continue to change. And how do we preserve the unique qualities that we love while managing that change?
You touched on your experiences a minute ago. What strengths and experiences do you bring to the position that you could use to address those issues?
Well, some of the things that that I gained from my experience in the Coast Guard as a sector commander here in the Pacific Northwest, and as a sector commander for 3 years on the Great Lakes, and as commanding officer of an air station in New Orleans, and executive officer of another air station in Michigan before that, are the ability to work complex issues with people from diverse backgrounds and different perspectives and find common goals. Realize those areas where we're not going to make any progress, put those aside, focus on the common goals, and work together to achieve greater things than we had hoped. When I was a sector commander on the Great Lakes, I was the incident commander for the Spill of National Significance exercise in 2007 that involved about 500 people, 85 different agencies, local, state, tribal, federal, and private sector organizations, working a 3-day simulated massive oil spill on Lake Michigan. And you really get to know that people come from different, they have different budgetary constraints, different requirements, different political biases, and you figure out, well, you can get that many people in a room together and get them to identify goals, prioritize those goals, work within limited funding available, and achieve them. Those are the types of things that we do in the Coast Guard constantly. And I think, you know, when you look at the city council, people come from different political backgrounds and perspectives, and we're never going to be unanimous on all the issues, but we can certainly work collegially together and find common ground and work towards a common vision.
Regarding the housing crunch, what could the city possibly be doing to alleviate that?
It seems that every single person that comes to town knew, the college president most recently talks about affordable housing as being the most significant issue. Mr. Perot at the Daily Historian said the same thing when he met with all the community leaders. The number one issue that was identified to him by employers and organizations in the area was a lack of affordable housing. So I think we need some innovative solutions. I attended a city council meeting a few months ago where city staff brought together some proposals for things like accessory dwelling units and changes to setbacks and changes to elevations. I think we need to look at those very, very closely because in order to make a dent in affordable housing, there's got to be some change, and we've got to think out of the box a little bit. And I think we need to be willing to look really closely at those things that we could do, the change that we can accept that's not going to destroy the nature of our city, destroy the historic neighborhoods. And I think that probably we can do more than we think. So I'd like to look. I thought most of those proposals city staff brought forward that weren't acted on at the time were pretty good proposals based on a lot of research.
Okay, so the issue of accessory dwelling units is before the Planning Commission right now. Sounds like you would keep an open mind about
that. I'm very open mind and favorably disposed towards that. And I would note that, I made a comment at a city council meeting several months ago regarding the library, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute as well. And when I stood up, I said, you know, most people that stand up at city council meetings look like me. And by that, if you can't see me, it's radio. After all, I have a white beard, right? So white-bearded gentleman and white-bearded, white-haired people.
It's Astoria. They're
typically the ones who stand up at city council meetings. But there are a lot of other constituencies in Astoria who don't come to city council meeting either because they can't get away from their families or they're working or they're young and don't realize they can. And I think it's important that we don't just focus on the comments made at city council from people who already have housing they can afford, but we focus on the people who aren't there that are the issue, people who can't find housing they can afford. And we really need to be willing to make changes, the changes that are necessary to help out those people that are more disenfranchised and aren't able to take advantage of our community.
Okay. You touched on another big issue that was just before the council, and that is the library and whether to remodel or rebuild it. And the council voted 3-2 not to rebuild or not to remodel or, excuse me, not to build an entirely new library, but to use existing funds and hopefully do a bit of fundraising to remodel the library where it is now. Where do you stand on that issue?
I think the number one issue to say about that is Astoria deserves and needs the absolute best library that it can afford. And why do I say that? I say that because many people have said, well, in the day that you can pull out your phone and look up anything, why do you need a library at all? And that is such that's just absolutely the wrong approach. And I've done a lot of research on this over the last couple of years, looking at what the best libraries around the country are doing to make themselves relevant and of value to their community. And it's absolutely true that a really fine library is a huge community asset. It's not just what we think of when we were kids, maybe, that's a place where you get books and check out records. I mean, it's a place, will always be a place that's a repository for books and magazines and media. It's a place where there's widespread computer access for the community, many people who don't have access at home, for example. It's a place where learning takes place, where meetings and presentations are held, where all kinds of innovative thinking takes place and creativity. And it's a place where, in a community like ours, which has a lot of underprivileged children, children get a leg up on their competitors. Our children shouldn't be at a disadvantage to kids in a place like Hillsborough. And we should do whatever we can. So a really fine library will help attract employers. I've heard executives at the hospital, executives in our school system say they have employers come look at Astoria and sometimes choose not to come here for a variety of reasons. It could be the quality of what they perceive as the quality of the schools, it's housing. A great library can be one of those things that goes into a package that attracts people to our community who would contribute to our community. Having said that, you know, what can we afford? It wasn't clear at all to me from the city council meeting exactly what a bond measure would look like, you know, how much of a bond measure would be required that would result in an acceptable increase in property tax, which probably, frankly, is nothing more than about $50 a year. I mean, what does that look like? Is that even achievable to have a bond measure that would result in no more than a $50 a year annual increase in a $200,000 home? I don't know. But whether a new library would be built, if it could be, if there was a way to find an affordable way to build a new library, which is questionable, if we're going to stay in the same library building and build new, it's absolutely critical that we build the best library that we can, because we're talking about an asset for our kids and our grandkids. It's an asset for the future. The current library was built in 67, 49 years, almost 50 years ago. So whatever we do now could be for the next 50 years, and we need to be thinking about our kids and the future of our community.
What other issues would you like to see brought before the council?
Oh, gosh. I really liked Councillor Nimlewill's comment that we need to have a shared vision, that we need to really do some strategic visioning and establish a vision for the future. Because if you don't have a vision that we all agree on, then your day-to-day decisions, what impact are those decisions having on your future vision? Well, if you don't have one, you don't know. So I favor her idea that we should focus on that. We did talk about affordable housing already and the library. I attended the Economic Development Strategy kickoff meeting at Fort George the other night. I think that's very exciting. I definitely plan on being a part of that, with a good cross-section of people from the business community, from the educational community, from government, private citizens as part of that group. The port director had some great things to say. And it's absolutely imperative that we take a holistic approach to economic development, and that we ensure we're, again, identifying those key characteristics and attributes Astoria has that we must preserve no matter what. And then within those constraints, identify what types of businesses can we attract here, given our small footprint. What types of, whether it's small manufacturing firms, whether it's expansion of some activities at the port in keeping with the maritime history and legacy in Astoria, whether it's information technology firms, but having a holistic look at that that involves all the key members of the community is absolutely critical. And as tourism continues to grow in Astoria and become more popular, I think it's even more important that we bring other types of industry here as well, because tourism can decline. And most tourism service-related jobs that support tourism are frankly not that well-paying jobs. And I think we need some, you know, good working-class, skilled blue-collar jobs as well as white-collar jobs in addition to the tourism jobs.
Okay. Regarding vision, where do you see Astoria 5, 10, 50 years down the road?
I'd like to think that we've made some strides towards providing that affordable housing, towards making some appropriate changes that don't destroy the nature of our community, but allow for more people to live here and not have to commute from, you know, far out in the country to get to their jobs in Astoria, including people that are on the lower end of the income scale. I'd like to think we've made some of those changes. I like to think probably tourism will continue to grow. I hope that the port is able to attract some more jobs that are, again, keeping with the maritime tradition here. You know, there's a lot of talk in the Riverfront Vision Plan, which I've read through several times now, about the working waterfront and really the whole legacy of our community from the time it was a center of trading among Native Americans and, of course, founded by John Jacob Astor with the goal of making it the major West Coast shipping port, which, of course, it never fully became, but has always been a port. And so I think the port and maritime-related jobs are always important. But I hope that we also have become a center for a few other industries as well, on a smaller scale, information technology, small manufacturing. I hope that North Tongue Point has been developed into something that has a lot of jobs out there. So there's an article in the paper just the other day, another big sort of pie-in-the-sky idea for making it a major shipping port has kind of fallen through. If that's not in the cards for us in Astoria, then let's develop North Tongue Point as an industrial center with good, skilled, blue-collar jobs for people that can support their families and contribute to the tax base in Astoria.
Thank you. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you so much for coming into the studio today and talking with me, Bruce.
It's been a great pleasure, Joan, and I am having a public meeting on Monday the 10th at the Hampton Inn at 6:30 to meet the candidate. If any Ward 4 residents want to learn more, please come.
You have been listening to an interview with Bruce Jones, who's running for the Ward 4 position on the Astoria City Council in November. Earlier, we heard a pre-recorded interview with Bruce's challenger, Corey Peterson. I hope you can join me 2 weeks from now for another segment of Perspectives. Thanks for listening. And thanks to my show engineer, Albert Smith, who is also hosting Friday Folk up next.
You've been listening to Perspectives here on the stations of Coast Community Radio. This is KMUN Astoria at 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook at 89.5, streaming live on the World Wide Web, where coastradio.org.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Hurricane Matthew may have been downgraded, but it remains a potentially deadly storm as a Category 3 with top winds of 120 miles per hour. More than 20 million people from eastern Florida to the Carolinas are under a hurricane watcher warning. As of 11 a.m. Eastern, the center of the slow-moving storm was located about 95 miles southeast of Jacksonville, Florida, where roughly half a million people were advised to evacuate. Lindsay Kilbride of member station WJCT in Jacksonville says many people are choosing to ride out the storm at home.
Matthew is expected to hit the Jacksonville area within 10 hours. Florida Governor Rick Scott says Northeast Florida is on his worry list.
Let's remember, the storm is only past half our state, so this is not over.
The storm was weakening slightly this morning, but the city's mayor, Lenny Curry, says predictions of 7 to 9 foot storm surges and up to 25 foot waves at the beach can be deadly.
So the message